Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. This is The Run Through. I'm Chloe Mao.
And I'm Cho Minardi. And we have a friend here in the studio with us today, Virginia Smith of Vogue. She's the global head of fashion.
Virginia, this is very exciting. Welcome to The Run Through with Vogue.
Thank you, Chloe.
Can you introduce yourself to us?
Yes, I'm Virginia Smith, and I'm the global lead for fashion.
What does that mean?
Your guess is as good as mine, Chloe. I basically sort of lead the Global Fashion Network, which is a network of editors that work across Vogue, GQ, Vanity Fair, Allure, Glamour, Teen Vogue, and we work globally as a group of networks together.
AKA a lot of work. I don't think a lot of people know how many territories we work with. How many do you directly work with?
For Vogue, which is sort of the largest fashion team, we work with a large group in the United States, a big group in the UK, and then we have teams in Italy, France, Spain, Mexico, India, Taiwan, and Japan.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. I want to talk about some things that everyone's been thinking about this week,
okay.
Which is... I feel like since the end of last week, everyone's been very ruffled about La Roche's Instagram announcement right after the Oscars that he is retiring. I don't know Law. I'm a student of his work with Zendaya and others. But what's your takeaway from this? Because then he also did a podcast interview with Lindsay Peoples.
Yeah, it was actually a really great interview. And I watched it in bed on a Saturday morning, and I couldn't believe I watched the whole thing. But
his
story is so
hour.
Compelling, and hearing him tell his story, obviously he's had tremendous challenges in his life. I mean, he talks about it in this interview, how his mother, how he had to kind of basically raise himself from a very young age.
His mother left him alone when he was 14.
Yes. So he talked about constantly being in like survival mode. And I think a lot of his responses and the way that he's had to approach the world and this, what the world of fashion, like he's always kind of felt that he's had to be, he's kind of on his own, finding a way in, having to be really scrappy and really put all of his passion into it because he, I mean, it was interesting hearing him talking about it. It sounds like he has like zero life work balance. His work takes up his entire life. It takes up his entire heart. You can tell he's so passionate about what he does. And I think for him, he has gotten to a point which I think few celebrity stylists or stylists in general get to, where he has become a star in his own right. And I think you get to that point and you start to think about, well, what's my worth in the conversation around fashion and what I'm doing and what I'm given? And is there room for me to expand in another direction? And I think that's the conclusion he got to. Obviously, there were lots of details. I think it all started at the Louis Vuitton show because there was seemingly not a seat for him next to Zendaya. And he's so used to... They came up together. I mean, I interviewed...
Okay, but she's the star, so is
Yes, she's the star, but, like, they have this symbiotic relationship. I remember going to interview Zendaya backstage, and she did that Tommy collaboration. And it was like they completed each other's sentences. Like, it's a real collaboration.
Okay, but creativity does not a seating chart make.
No. No, and I think that was probably like the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't think it was the reason that he's retiring. And obviously, like, he's also very good at social media. So he knows how to get people talking. He used it as a moment to really tell his story, in my opinion.
Can we also say, like, who he styles, what he's
known
for? Yeah,
I mean, he styles Zendaya.
Kerry
Washington. I mean, the list is endless.
He dressed Hunter Schaefer in that, like,
Hunter
feather.
Schaefer.
Was that Loewe?
And Demula Meester, yeah.
Oh, it was basically just a feather as a bra to the Vanity Fair Oscars party. I don't know Law, but I will say that takes some chutzpah to insist on being called an image architect, not a stylist. Just going to say that.
Law is a tour de force. There's no getting around that. You're always at the beck and call of everyone else if you're in that position. And I would imagine after so many years of that, it's just there's a limit to what you can take.
As your star rises, your team gets bigger. And I think he's very focused on having a very personal, close relationship with the women, mostly who he styles. And I think it becomes more challenging when there was when your team grows bigger and there are so many people.
And
that,
the lines of communication get clogged.
So many stakeholders. You're not, it's not just an intimate conversation.
Yeah. Everyone has an opinion. That seems extremely frustrating. I would completely understand that. So law's a good a reminder in self-care. Maybe let's have that be the takeaway.
Yeah.
And putting yourself first.
Yes.
And if you're going to retire, go big.
Yeah, exactly. Jeremy Scott of Moschino announced he is not retiring, but departing. For me, I just associate him with loud hamburger moments. Is there more nuance to it than that, Virginia?
I was sitting there the first time we had the first Jeremy Scott Moschino show, and I was frankly like a little like, wow, McDonald's. Okay, unexpected. But I have to say, you know, I think he brought a huge amount of energy around that brand. And ultimately, I think he got a lot of devoted clients around that brand. And I think he's done a really tremendous job for Moschino. I mean, people were always talking about it. It was clever.
Because a lot of them were like very gimmicky or trompe-l'oeil or truly Katy Perry, no joke, wore an actual foam hamburger to the Met Ball.
I don't think it was to the Met Ball. It was to the after party.
I feel like I remember her walking up those stairs.
I mean, she's worn a chandelier and the hamburger.
Oh, was it? I see.
The chandelier might have been for the Met and the after party might have been the hamburger. But
still
nevertheless.
Out there. Oof. Out there.
Splitting fries. All right.
You know, I say he's done an incredible job, but I can see how after 10 years he's ready to pass the baton to someone else. So,
and where is his baton going?
I mean, he obviously has his own brand that, you know, I'm sure he'd probably like to pay more attention to. I don't know. I read something today and it sounded like he might have something else in the works, but he did not want to say.
Yeah. So. I got the sense there's a lot of mystery around what he's, I don't think he's quite ready to announce the thing, but there is, it does seem like something's cooking.
Okay.
It's not fries. Sorry, bad joke.
It feels fitting. I also feel like everyone's been talking about the Lauren Collins New Yorker article about Damna and Balenciaga. I feel like most people haven't read all of the article, but...
I'm raising my hand. I'm saving it for that Saturday morning when I can just lie in bed. Full disclosure, Virginia has it printed out right here so we could all take a look at it.
Unfortunately, something went wrong and it's literally become a 50-page book.
Virginia
right here
has
that
a
I can...
50-page printout that looks like fifth
in
grade
a font
flash
that
cards.
I can read from here.
It looks like you're giving a history report in sixth grade.
But since you have read said article, why don't you give us the highlights?
Here's what I will say. For you two who are deeply versed in the language of Damna and Balenciaga and the past 5 years of him at the brand, there's not a ton that you won't know in the article. For me, who is Damna adjacent and doesn't, I don't go to the shows, I don't know the ins and outs of it, I found it to be extremely helpful contextually. I thought Lauren did a great job of centering him in the cultural conversation. Lauren's a great Paris-based New Yorker writer. She does sort of every great profile from France, and she describes him as a combo of P.T. Barnum and Walter Benjamin, which I thought was great. It's like it's both the showman but also the critique of the culture at the same time. And also on the heels of this past show where he really made a point of going back to the roots of the craft, and he said, maybe I was born to be a seamstress, not a designer, and the show invitation was a jacket pattern that you could actually take to your tailor to have made, which I didn't realize.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's.
I hope you kept it, Choma.
We did not.
But Lauren did a great job describing the last like five shows, which I remember, of course, seeing on social media and hearing about. He was known for these great shows of pageantry and showmanship that were both very theatrical and based in play, like he did a Simpsons film, but also real commentary on socio-political situations and also had quite a lot of sort of, you know, coy humor in it, like recreating the EU Parliament.
Yeah, that was epic.
So I did think that Lauren did a great job of just sort of setting the scene for those of us who might not be as Balenciaga fluent. Oh, I wanted to see if anyone is excited about Succession.
Oh, my God. So excited.
Because I feel like people haven't been this excited about a new season of a show since White Lotus. Feels like a big cultural moment. But our colleague Taylor Antrim wrote a review. He watched the first four episodes. And truly, it was like he couldn't gush enough.
Wow.
Just said it was a transcendental experience.
What day does it actually go like?
Sunday evening.
Okay.
Ooh.
I watched an episode of Swarm, which everyone's
What's
talking
that?
About.
Oh, I have not seen that. How
I don't
is
even
that?
Know what that is.
Guys, oh, get no, ready. So it is Donald Glover's new show.
Okay.
It stars Dominique Fishback. It is basically based on a true story of a Beyoncé superfan who in kind of gets embroiled in this kind of grisly...
Beehive? Is that why it's called Swarm?
I don't even want to know if I want to give it away.
Okay.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. So she has this roommate and they're best friends and there's a boyfriend involved and there's a cheating situation and then it gets very dark. And I've only watched one episode and I'm obsessed. And I love Dominique Fishback. She's adorable.
Ooh, okay, that's fun.
And she's been doing some really cute looks on the red carpet in the last couple of years too. She's adorable. I'm very here for her.
Okay.
I am completely obsessed with Drive to Survive.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Oh my God, you guys, it's been on for like, oh, this is like season four or five.
I keep hearing about this.
I have no idea what it is.
Okay, it's about F1 racing. Which,
oh, wow.
What do I know about F1 racing? But... That led into my obsession to Lewis Hamilton, as you know, which we've discussed in depth. But the whole thing is amazing. That's your next assignment.
Hi everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you. Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
Describe your style for people who maybe don't know.
Well, I have pretty much a uniform at this point in my life, which is mainly a sweater and a pant of some sort. I'm
very cheap, by the way, guys.
It's usually a wide leg pant.
Usually a wide leg pant, and that
it's usually a boot of some sort.
It's usually a boot of some sort, maybe a sandal. Well, I have on Celine by Phoebe Philo today.
Oh, so good. I bet you're. I mean, we're all excited for Phoebe.
Oh my God, I am like waiting with bated breath. We're saving up, but I like a particular silhouette, and I'm not so particular to the brand as I am the style.
And what's your go-to dressing up outfit or brand?
Well, I wear a lot of Dries, as you probably both know.
Yes,
I'm a big fan of his. So I have, it's usually Dries. I have a dress that I love, a skirt that I love, and then obviously a bunch of pants that I love from him, but.
You're one someone I think does black tie pants the best of anyone I know.
And they're always beautiful, embellished, or there's some sort of special twist to them. A little bird told me, aka your best friend Victor, that you used to work in politics.
Oh my God, Choma. For some crazy reason, I ended up working for Secretary James A. Baker III when he was at the Department of Treasury. Now, bear in mind, my family is completely Democratic. My middle name is Fulbright, from J. William Fulbright of the Fulbright Scholarship. He was a United States Democratic senator, one of the most liberal senators for quite some time. So how in the world I ended up there, who knows? I was in Washington. All my friends had a job. I just graduated. I did not want to go back to Dallas. I grew up in a town called Texarkana, Arkansas, and I'd gone to college at SMU in Dallas. And I really did not want to go back to Dallas because I had just broken up with a boyfriend, my way of breaking up was never to call him back. So
you ghosted
him. I was very mature at that point in my life. So I was like, finally my parents were like, you either got to get a job or you got to come home. And I call my poor mother and say, well, I got a job And I said, well, it's working for James A. Baker III. And literally, I thought she was going to have a heart attack. But it ended up being sort of an incredible experience. But I did realize that, you know, politics was not going to be what I wanted.
Yes. Fashion beckoned. New York beckoned.
Exactly.
So then what happened?
I ended up moving to New York. I went to actually FIT for and did a one-year fashion buying and merchandising program. And it was great. And then from there, I got a internship at a company called Anne Klein and ended up working there for a while. And from Anne Klein, I went to Calvin Klein.
Are they related?
They are not related.
Okay.
They were in the same building.
Had to ask.
And the reason I got the job is because I held the door open for Gabriella Forte, who was then CEO of Calvin Klein. She's since become a friend of mine.
Chivalry is not dead.
Exactly. You know, she was quite a force. She still is a force. And they were all – Robert Triefus was my boss at the time, who's now at Gucci. But he was like – I could tell very nervous about me meeting Gabriella, right? And I walk in. She goes, oh, I know you. You held the door for me. And it was after that I could do no wrong because I'd held the door open for her.
You just never know. Good. Listen up, guys.
Yeah. Manners pay.
Exactly.
They do.
You never know.
So you did PR at Calvin.
I did PR at Calvin.
And a very interesting time. I mean, what was it like being at Calvin in those at that time?
So this was the late 90s.
Okay.
Late 90s, early 2000s. And it was incredible. It was when Calvin the man was there.
Yeah.
And but what led me to Vogue is that I decided after 8.5 years I'd wanted to take a break from Calvin. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I didn't want to look for a job while I was at Calvin. So I talked to Calvin about it. And the day my leaving was Influencer Daily, I get a phone call from Tawny Goodman asking me to come see Anna. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, well, Wendy's resigned. And Wendy Hertzberg was the market director for Vogue. And so I come in and see, you know, meet with Grace and Tawny, who I sort of, you know, knew, obviously, from working at Calvin. And
Grace
then
Coddington.
Grace Coddington, Tawny Goodman, you know, icons. And, you know, then I go see Anna, and I think it was really, you know, a situation of ignorance is bliss on my part. You know, it was just like...
You were like, I have no idea what I'm walking
like,
into.
I really didn't, and I didn't have any time to think about it because...
What did you wear?
Well, of course, I had an all black, which is, of course,
No.
But I don't. No one told me that either.
Well, listen, I was at Calvin. It was like black and minimal. But I think the thing that probably did save me is that, you know, it was definitely in the time of everyone loving all the European designers. And she asked me who I loved. And I said, I actually do love Calvin Klein. You know, I've always worn it. That, I think, right then she sent me, go see HR. You know?
Anna Wintour does not love black.
Yeah, she rarely wears
not.
It herself.
I've never seen Anna in black.
I've seen her in black, but there's always something else.
You saw the vintage Chanel at the White House.
Yeah, that
was fabulous.
That was one of my faves.
But yeah, she's more a fan of a rainbow of florals than a black on black look. So you started what year?
I started in 2002.
So it's been 20 years.
It's been 20 years. And
what's the biggest difference from when you started to now in your job?
Oh, God, where do you begin? When I started, there was a group of editors, Grace Coddington, Tawny Goodman, Phyllis Posnick, Camilla Nickerson, that were icons in the...
You intimidated when you started?
Yes, I was terrified of these women. I mean, terrified. I would come in at the crack of dawn, and I would have, like, you know, every single hanger, you know, perfectly lined up. I would, like... You know, if that Chanel was not getting hair, I was on the phone.
Well, explain what that means. Like, what are you doing for these women?
So my role, particularly in the beginning, I was a market editor is what we're called. And it's sort of an archaic term at this point. But
why?
Because I feel like the roles have really expanded so much. But I think in the beginning, it was probably to differentiate between the editors that go on shoots and produce those shoots and style those shoots, which were typically at that day in time called sittings editors. Now they're more commonly referred to as stylists. And the market team is the team that really calls in all the clothes, all the shoes, all the accessories, all the jewelry. So we're really wanting to make all of these editors very happy. And certainly new on the job, I was like, if we weren't getting that one Chanel look, I would be like, ooh, sweating it out with Grace. But
So is this at Four Times Square?
This was at Four Times Square.
Okay.
Yes.
And I feel like the thing I'm asked about most is, what is the closet really like?
Yeah.
Is the closet like Devil Wears Prada? Is it like Sex and the City? And it's not. But can you describe?
There's a new closet now.
Yes. I mean,
yeah, how's the closet changed?
Well, the closet at Four Times Square was, you know, not impressive, let's face it. It really wasn't. It was, I mean, it might have looked good in a couple of those Sex and the City things, but oof, in real life, it was quite small.
And windowless, obviously.
Yeah. And you remember, we worked in the hallways of a Four Times Square. Like, all the editors had a rack outside of their office.
Yeah.
And we worked in these hallways that had very little lighting for some inexplicable reason, but that's how we worked. But we did have a
small— Did steal things from racks?
Oh, are you kidding?
All the time.
Camilla, Tawny, I mean, Camilla and Tawny were probably the worst. Sorry, ladies, if you're listening, but you know it's true. I mean, Tawny is amazing. We used to say Tawny could do, like, ready, set, style instead of ready, set, cook.
Wow.
She could, like, make anything. She could just take things off of everyone's rack and make her own story. She's pretty remarkable that way. Yeah, she is. It's very top chef. Grace can't be bothered. If it's not Prada, Grace is not interested.
Send it home.
Hilarious.
So the closet,
but now,
like,
the closet is a whole different ballgame.
Because it's nicer, or are there more things? Are
it's
there actual
huge.
Clothes there?
Well, it's a global fashion network closet.
Yeah.
So contrary
to
what Vogue believes, it is actually not just solely for Vogue.
No.
It's Vogue and GQ, Vanity Fair.
Wow. Everyone shares a closet now?
Everyone. But it's huge. And there's incredible light. And we have very fancy fitting rooms
that we can use.
There's fitting rooms?
You have to go in there.
I haven't been.
Oh, my God. There's great sofas. There's wallpaper. I'll take you there.
The fitting room is equal to the size of a small studio apartment in New York. They're amazing.
It's bigger than my apartment.
But for clarity, I feel like people are always saying to me, oh, can you just go borrow a dress in the closet? I'm like, oh, good grief.
No. You can't.
There's
do
no
that.
Clothes in the closet unless they're for a shoot.
Yeah, there's clothes that are for shoots, but we don't just like take things out for a spin.
But
because
there are shoes.
There's Spanx.
There are lots of shoes.
There are shoes, undergarments, hats,
undergarments,
accessories.
If you need a Spanx for an event, I have definitely gone down to the closet and be like, help me out, guys.
Yeah.
I need some to smooth out.
So there's like some, I would say, bench Manolos. Like Manolos that are just waiting
we
to be
We have a little Manolo secret closet.
Yeah.
That's locked up. For special purposes.
Oh, it's under lock and key.
I did not know. Actually, we should talk about the run-throughs, because the namesake
of...
We stole it from you. I've never witnessed a run-through, but I've actually never, like, had to lead a run-through.
God, no.
So the run-through is what we call the process of when we show Anna the clothes. So what typically happens is that once we decide on a story, what we do are called pull boards. And what that means is that we make digital boards of all the looks that we're planning to use for that story.
And is it you and your team making it, or is it the stylist first making
it? It's sort of a combination, to be honest. So we show those to Anna and usually our creative director and a group of people just sort of say, this is the idea, this is the vibe of the story. So everyone's sort of in the loop. And then once that sign-off happens, we actually start calling in the clothes, and we do that a few days before the shoot, so we can all, you know, see, like, oh, that was a surprise. That didn't look exactly the same in real life. But we put the story together on the rack, and that's with the sittings editor, and then whoever that is and myself go in for the infamous run-through, and that's when we really go through the looks with Anna, and then we'll talk about...
And it's in her office.
It's in her office. It's, you know, we're rolling the rack in her office, unless it's a huge thing, and then she will come down to the closet, but usually we're rolling a rack into her office. And we just go through it, and then we'll talk about the location and anything else sort of pertinent to the shoot, and, you know, that's it. And then hopefully... You know, she gives it her approval and we're done. If you know, there have been times, particularly in the past, where we got sent out to, you know, begin again.
Oh, my God.
Or we can do better. We can do better.
What are some memorable cover shoot stories
or give us some fun ones.
Or any dramas of having to airlift a sequin in?
The most memorable shoot recently is probably Rihanna, the Rihanna shoot.
Oh, that one was
Choma,
yeah,
you know
I was in the
much
basement.
About that
I
as
was
anyone.
In the basement.
That's one of my favorite Vogue.com videos so is when she tells Annie, what did she say? Bitch loves a balcony.
I mean, that was Alex, epic. I remember we had our big meeting in Paris the next
this
morning.
This was the Rihanna cover shoot, pregnant at the Ritz in Paris. Yeah. Choma wrote the story. Virginia provided the clothes for the story.
Yes.
Alex Harrington styled it.
Yes.
There were many custom. I mean, wasn't it all custom as well? A lot of it? I mean, because the Alaya pieces were.
The Alaya pieces were incredible. I mean, they.
Just looking
it
at
was
them.
Amazing. They were like molded and really beautifully done. And, you know, we found out very close to that shoot date that she was pregnant. So we had to sort of regroup. And that shoot had gotten delayed a few times. So.
Wait. I'm sorry, you already had pulled the clothes thinking she wasn't pregnant?
Yes, it was happening. At one point, it was happening in like December. And then
Barbados.
Yeah, in Barbados. And then it got moved. I think it was in LA for a moment. And then finally it ended up in Paris. But by that time.
Which was divine timing because it was perfect.
That was amazing.
Yeah, and she was just in at the peak of her like pregnancy glow. It was perfect.
Okay, I have an important question because you also dress many people for the Met, many people for the Tonys, anyone for like a special event who's a FOA, friend of Anna. What is the best gift or what are some of the best gifts you've gotten as thank yous? Because I think many people do not thank you at all, but some people are surprising and send nice gifts, right?
Flowers are the nicest gift I've gotten. And, you know, a lot of people really don't acknowledge the effort, so it's really nice when someone does. And you know what? Amy Schumer sent us chicken wings for her cover
once.
That's
kind of fun.
I was like, yes. Down for the chicken wings.
Anna Hilarious. Was like horrified.
Hilarious. Of course she sent chicken wings.
Well, let's end on chicken wings.
Yes. Thank you for joining us so much.
Thank you, guys.
It was really Virginia. Fun.
Bye.
This is The Run Through. We'll be back in just a moment.
And we're back with the run-through with Vogue.
I can't believe it's been over a year since the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
I know. We spoke to Svetlana Bevza, who's the founder and creator of the Ukrainian fashion brand Bevza. And we talked to her right at almost the anniversary. Mm. And it's,
she'd recently moved back to Kyiv.
She and her two young kids evacuated to Poland, and then they ended up in Portugal for a while. But her husband's been fighting on the front lines for, you know, the past 12 months. So it was really interesting to hear what her day-to-day life is. And what I found most interesting was how in some ways things are very much the same. Her kids are going to school. She's going to the office every day. But in other ways, it's extremely different. Yeah, her husband's been drafted into the military. He's been serving his duty for the last 12 months. So there's been some real uncertainty and ups and downs with that. There's electricity shortages. Her line of production has been completely disrupted because a lot of her stuff was made in Ukraine. It's really interesting to hear what quotidian life is like during wartime.
Mm. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Where are you, Svetlana?
I'm in Kyiv now.
Oh, you're in Kyiv.
Oh, you are?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm in the office.
You still have a headquarters in Kyiv?
Yes, we do. We just closed for first 1.5 months since war started, but then reopened.
Wow.
Yeah.
You and your kids went to Portugal for a little bit. Now you're back. Will you tell us sort of what your trajectory has been over the last year?
Well, we left Ukraine with kids after a week of from in February.
And how did you leave?
It took 24 hours on a bus to get to the border of Ukraine. Usually it takes around 7 hours, but everything was blocked. So, yeah, we spent 24 hours there. And then by car, we left through the border, and then reached to Portugal.
Sorry, you went to what border? With Poland or Czechoslovakia?
Okay.
And I should say thank you so much because you were the reason that my cousin was able to get safely out of.
I remember this situation.
Yes, yeah.
Will you tell us the story, Choma?
It was like Svetlana was our fairy godmother. So my cousin was studying medicine in the Ukraine. So he traveled up to the Polish border, but he was having trouble getting a hotel to stay. And Liana, who is a former Vogue writer who's covered many designers in Ukraine and travels to the Ukraine often and is a good friend of yours, Svetlana. She put out a message on Instagram saying that my cousin was stranded and needed a place to stay. And they turned him away because they were turning away a lot of African students. It was racism ultimately. And Svetlana was able to call the hotel and persuade them to take my cousin in.
I just called to the hotel and told them, like, everything is fine. Just give this boy a room. He needs to spend a night in the hotel. So they were just afraid. They didn't know what to expect from anywhere. Yeah. I mean, all Ukraine, we were all terrified during the first months. Our team was hiding in basements. Somebody left the country within the first week. And we had a chat. We still have it. And it's called, "Are you okay? Are you safe?" So basically that was our conversation during the first months of war, because we couldn't understand what can happen tomorrow. I left to Portugal because there are a lot of production.
Interesting.
So yeah, to check maybe to relocate our office, our team there. But it never happened, actually, because it was my big surprise, actually. A lot of people, producers from here and from my team, they told me that they don't want to leave the country. Mm. Not everybody wanted to leave the country. Yes, probably those people with the small kids wanted to secure and moved to the western part of Ukraine. Somebody moved to Poland because it's nearby, but not everybody. And what a trend I see now, that a lot of people coming back to Ukraine, actually.
Interesting. After how long? Like, they're coming back in the last few months, or they came back, you know, 6 months ago or soon after everything happened?
Actually, I think it started on a fourth or fifth month of war.
Wow.
What does your life look like now? Like, what, since you've gotten back to, you know, I know you're showing in Paris, you're able to produce and your team is back together. What's your day-to-day been like since you've been back in Kyiv?
Well, the same. Only, you know, when there's sirens, we hear it very often in the office. First months, we used to hide in the corridor just for security. Now, I don't think if it's good or bad, but we don't pay much attention to that. That's the reality. I wouldn't wish to anybody to experience things like that. And I never thought that I could witness war in my life. But I think it saves my emotional state to go on. And the same is with the team, because if we stay home and do nothing, it's much harder to survive emotion.
Mm. And you have two young kids, correct?
Yes. I have a son. Mark is 8. He will soon turn 5. And Anna, my daughter, is 4 years old.
And is school back in session? Do you feel safe leaving them at school all day?
Actually, daughter stays at home and Mark, he goes to school, and they have this basement, which is very well equipped. I checked it. And every time when there are sirens, they go down there and continue their school program.
Obviously, this upheaval must, you know, I can't imagine what it must, you know, how it affects your day-to-day life and how it affects, you know, how you view the world. I'm wondering how this is informing the way that you work as a designer, because I know that you've always included, you know, Ukrainian imagery or references, mm-hmm. and that's been important. You know, being a Ukrainian brand is something that you're very, obviously, proud of and is part of who you are as a designer. How does an experience like this inform how you create?
I'm very proud of my team, actually, because I was in Portugal, and while doing the spring-summer collection, the production team, Atelier, they were here. And we managed to do this online, everything online. So I just sent them sketches, and I went back to Ukraine in August just to shoot the final lookbook. And, you know, the meanings, the codes, which are the part of storytelling about Ukraine, we used them multiple times during the seasons because I see fashion as a very strong voice. And that is why we dedicated this collection, of course, to Ukraine. I didn't think, I would say, put by our efforts is to tell this story and to show that Ukraine, it's a very rich culture, actually.
You were talking about how a lot of your motifs reference Ukrainian sensibilities and symbols. I love your wheat chaff necklaces and earrings, but can you just describe those to people who haven't seen them?
So basically, the main symbol, the spikelets that we launched in 2019, is just earrings and necklaces. Then they look like a spikelet, and it's the main symbol of our fertile land. And the bread itself is a sacred thing in Ukraine during centuries, through the centuries. And there are a lot of traditions, even when you get married. Getting married, you always do it with bread. When you go to meet somebody important, you always bring bread. So bread saves lives. And our countries survived, came through this artificial hunger.
Where are all of your pieces produced, manufactured? Or is it all made in Ukraine?
Yes, basically 90%.
Wow.
100% were produced in Ukraine before the war.
Tell me a bit about your, you know, how you came to fashion, how you fell in love with fashion.
It was from the very, very early childhood. My mom remembers when I was around 5, I brought her a sketch. I still have it, actually. There were two buildings. And I told her that it's fashion houses, because I literally thought that fashion house is a building, it's a house. And so in that house, there were dressing rooms, people's beds, so people, girls only, had to sleep there and dress there and go to each other to have some parties.
Sounds like a dream.
I want to live in a fashion house.
You do. Don't worry.
Yes, you do. And I told my mom I want a fashion house. I loved to draw sketches, but mainly dresses. So that's how it just happened. But then I grew up, I didn't know where to study. So I was advised by my parents to get a normal education, as they said. I'm an economist, basically.
You studied economics?
Yeah,
interesting. Okay, well, that's helpful probably for owning a brand.
I remember nothing from there.
Okay, never mind.
I think it helped a bit, maybe. Then I risked to open a small atelier in Kyiv, and it was a bet with my friend. I told her that I will do my collection in 60 days, and she was hired on a new job, and she also had 60 days to launch a big project. The matter of that was a bottle of champagne. We both won, so we had the champagne together.
When you grew up, what access to fashion or fashion media did you have? Because I imagine growing up did you grow up in Kyiv?
Yes, I grew up in Kyiv.
Was it magazines or was it, TV?
So,
or what was your kind of, what were your first impressions?
Your fashion diet.
What were you looking at?
When I was a kid, I remember the catalog Quelle and Neckermann, no Vogue magazines. First I heard the word Vogue. My mom's friend, and she had a pack of cigarettes, Vogue. And I was studying in English in school, so I read, like it should be in English, I read Vogue. And she said, no, you have to read it Vogue. And I asked her, what does it mean? I was around 10 or 12. So she explained me that Vogue is fashion. That's how I know this word.
Oh, my God. I love it. Well, Svetlana, we just wanted to say goodbye and to thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this.
But it's been such a treat to talk to you. And we're thinking about you and your family? And
it's a huge honor for me, because when I think of, oh my God, a Vogue podcast, let me not just think about that, because I would get too nervous. So I'm just thinking of a pleasant conversation with the smart ladies. That's how...
It was a really lovely conversation, and we're so happy you were able to join us.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
The Run Through is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment. I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel. That's it for The Run Through this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Bye.